Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Do you have a financial question that needs answering? Call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for joining us. We are having a special edition of Hanson McLean's Money Matters this weekend, talking about the tax bill.
It's our Christmas tax show, our annual Christmas
gift to you.
Tax. Yeah. Well, to some of you.
So what we're going to do, we're going to talk about, one, what are some things that you should consider between now and the end of the year, 1 week left, which is very little. And two, what are some things that you need to be considering for 2018 and beyond?
Yeah, and what are the long-term or short-term ramifications of this on your personal life, on your financial life?
And it's an interesting bill, Pat, because if you look at the polls, the average American doesn't like it.
Yes.
But although most people are going to get a tax break.
Well, it depends on what state you're in.
Even in California, most people are getting a tax break in California.
That is
the highest income tax state. And in the high tax, still most, the majority.
Are going to see their overall taxes go
roughly
down.
Roughly right now, a third of people take an itemized deductions, 30% itemized deductions.
And 70%.
They say that next year, maybe 5% of Americans are going to itemize deductions.
Yes. Which actually makes the tax code easier for most.
It's not a postcard. But,
no.
Yeah.
Easier for most.
Somewhat easier.
Well, you still have to go through
the exercise, I suppose.
Yes. Yes.
But there's some interesting things in here that will have some ramifications. So let's first start off with talk about what you need to consider between now and December 31st. Right? Because that's the crunch we're in. For most of this tax bill are things that are just happening to you.
There's not much you can do to affect it.
Correct.
If you're a small business owner, there might be a couple things.
Next year.
Correct, next year.
But the couple of the key changes are you can no longer deduct in excess of $10,000 worth of state.
Or local. Taxes.
Yeah.
So.
Income or property taxes.
So what you want to do.
And I keep reading it everywhere, SALT, state and local taxes. Had you ever heard that term applied to this? Never. Now every article I read, it's in. It's funny how these things happen. So in the industry, been doing this 20-some-odd years, never read the term SALT until this year. Now it's in every article.
State and local taxes. So you want to pay your property taxes this year.
Maybe. If you itemize deductions currently and believe that you will not be able to itemize your deductions next year.
Then?
Pay your property taxes now.
Unless you have an impound account. In which case, although it may make sense for you to financially, for tax reasons, pay your property taxes now, you may not want to because the wires getting crossed with your impound account is going to be an absolute nightmare.
I couldn't imagine. With one week trying to, Christmas break, trying to contact your mortgage company.
While everyone is contacting them. So if you do not have an impound account, you may want to pay your taxes. In fact, I don't see any reason you wouldn't want to pay your taxes.
Your property taxes.
Yes, your property taxes. And unless the reason is the cost of money is...
Unless you don't itemize.
Then it doesn't matter.
If you don't itemize today...
You won't itemize next.
You won't. Yeah. So what's happened with the itemized... essentially, the standard deduction is doubling, and I imagine most people have heard this at this point.
And standard deduction means what, Scott?
Well, we can deduct for against our income... Certain expenditures we have, such as charitable contributions,
state and local taxes,
property taxes,
which would be a local tax,
medical expenses that exceed certain limits,
7.5% under
10%, I believe it
under
is.
The current it's 7.5. Under the new it's 10.
Is I think right? I already went to 10.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm going back a couple years.
Yeah, you're going back a couple different tax codes. And there's a couple of other small things in there. Primarily, it's been an interest deduction. So, of course, the big interest mortgage interest expense.
So essentially the standard deduction says, we're just going to pretend that you have this much in itemized deductions. And if your itemized deductions come above your standard deductions, then you take itemized. The mere fact that the standard deduction is being nearly doubled to $24,000 for a married couple or $12,700 for an individual. Is that right? $12,000 for an individual and $24,000 for a married couple. If you, there's a good chance that the average American is going to just take the standard deduction.
Some estimates said 95% of Americans are going to have a standard deduction going forward.
So you may want to prepay your property taxes, as we had mentioned. But if you take the standard deduction now, don't bother if you think you will take the standard deduction next year.
And even if you are, it would make sense to pay it today because our income tax rates are going to be slightly lower next year. The overall rates are going to be less.
Yes.
So if we can make a deduction. So some people wanted to kind of game the system. Wait a minute. What if we pay our state income taxes?
For 2018 right now.
Overpay, perhaps.
Yes.
Even.
Yes.
Let's say I owe $500 to
Doesn't
the state.
Work.
What if I paid $4,000?
Doesn't work.
They're going to limit you on it.
Yeah. Well, part of it actually is there's an argument.
I don't know how they're going to limit that.
I
when you
agreed
think
with
that.
You. Haven't actually you. That is a you're not you don't owe that tax yet. That's the argument, is you don't owe that tax. So how can you pay something you don't owe and then deduct it? And it doesn't have anything to do with this tax provision, is what I have read a couple articles that said. Think about it theoretically. How could you pay for something you don't actually owe? You haven't earned any money in 2018, but you're going to pay taxes on something you haven't earned.
Pat, you're trying to put logic to the tax code.
Well, it made sense. So what's the big deal, though, Scott, is the fact that you cannot deduct your taxes, your state or local income taxes, against your federal tax on your federal tax return.
Well, you've got up to $10,000.
But after that, you cannot deduct.
$10,000. Well, first of all, with the standard deduction as high as it is, most people,
it doesn't matter,
are going to have a greater savings because the standard deduction just went from $12,000 to $24,000 for the typical couple.
So right? This is good for most Americans.
Correct. And so, and some people think, wait a minute, I'm losing the state and local deduction. Yeah, but from a net basis, still most people are going to have a savings. Now, I was thinking about a particular client who's got two homes in California, had purchased within the last few years, both relatively nice homes, high income, paying lots of California property and income taxes. If that's you, you're well in excess of $10,000.
This is not good for you.
This is not good for you. But between now and December 31st,
the only thing you can do is prepay the property taxes.
You might also want to look at if there's some capital losses to harvest an account, but there seems to be less and less losses.
So what's the big thing out of this, Scott? Is it your mortgage interest?
Well, think about this. Mortgage interest, you can only deduct, assuming you're one of those, first of all, that it's going to continue to itemize your deductions.
Yes, which is, the estimate is between 5 and 10% of the population.
Correct. So most
people, it won't matter, but for some, it will.
And for people in California, there'll be some, clearly, that you have a large mortgage.
You live in the San Francisco Bay Area.
You pay property tax. You live in lots of different places. You get a higher income and have high property taxes, is going to impact you. But for going forward, it's not $1 million worth of mortgage interest you can deduct. It's now limited to $750,000.
And it doesn't include.
This is a biggie right here.
Home equity lines of credit.
Does not include home equity lines of credit.
Or it's essentially seconds. They're purchase only.
So.
So if you borrow money out of your house above and beyond what you paid for it, no go. You can't deduct it anymore.
Right. So let's say that next year you're planning on taking $75,000 second or home equity loan on your house to redo the kitchen and the bathrooms.
Can't deduct it, assuming that you were doing itemized deductions. 529 accounts, you can now use them for primary education, not just secondary education. I saw so much arguments about this in this bill going back and forth. I thought this is kind of a non-starter for most. The fact that there's not that much money in 529 accounts to begin with, and that people will use it for their first grader or second grader or 10th grader. I just thought that was a non-starter. So the 529s are, you know them as the college savings account. You can now use them for private schools prior to college age.
Some things, there was some talk in one of the earlier provisions where it was going to change the laws as far as how much gain we can exclude on the sale of our primary residence. That's been thrown out. So we can still exclude $250,000 if we're single or $500,000 worth of gain.
If you're wealthy, the amount of money that can go on estate tax-free or gift tax-free is doubled. So for a couple, for a
$22 million bucks,
it's approximately $22 million.
$11 million.
This would be a great time if you're in that situation to get together with your financial advisor and estate planning team and decide whether you should gift those assets under this tax code before it possibly gets changed.
Not between now and the end of the year. You mean over the next couple of years?
Well, I would probably do it within the next 2 years, yes. But you don't have to do it. In fact, there's no benefit.
Assuming
in
it's
doing
going
it
to be reduced.
I was really surprised that it got to here, weren't you?
I was amazed.
I was really surprised it got to here.
Frankly, I don't know why they increased it. I mean, look, I can understand the philosophy that maybe there shouldn't be any estate tax. But
this was such a 180-degree turn from 3 years ago, 4 years ago. It's amazing. It's amazing. Who was it good for? It was good for
I would have rather seen. I would have rather seen the savings, rather than increasing the estate taxes, have a greater savings for small business people, the people who create jobs and become the large business.
Well, there was some of that.
There was a little bit of that.
Here's where
we're going to see the gaming of this.
Yeah, the pass-through entities. This is where it will be gamed. This is where a business owner with some savvy.
They have no choice.
Well,
they've complicated. They've overcomplicated.
It is very, very complicated. We won't even try to dig into what the pass-through entity and the deductibility of types of income depending upon the industry that you're involved in. It's good for corporations. Large corporations, their taxes went down significantly, and the repatriation of dollars back into the U.S. from U.S. corporations where the assets are held offshore, 15.5% on cash assets and 8% on non-cash assets, which is actually good for the economy. It'll be good. If you happen to be happen to work for a nonprofit and your pay is over $1 million a year, both of you guys?
Both of you. Throughout the whole country, you mean?
Yeah.
How many nonprofits country? Where there's someone who makes more than $1 million?
Not many. Not many. So maybe the 2 dozen or 3 dozen of you, there is now a 21% excise tax on nonprofit.
That's a strange
employers.
One. Can't the donors decide?
Well, someone with an axe to grind. That's what I thought.
But where this is helpful, I think, for the average American, like it, don't like it, regardless.
You like the administration, don't like the administration.
The vast majority of Americans are going to get a tax break from this. We know that, right? The vast majority.
Some, yes.
The vast majority.
No, but not a huge tax break, but a tax break.
Yeah, some tax relief, yeah. Not tremendous. But the tax rates are going down. The brackets have gone from 15 to 12, and so there's and a little more room in some, although the higher tax rate went from 39.6 to 37. But it hits at a lower income level. So here's what I find interesting. Right now, the top 10% of Americans pay 70% of the taxes.
And that won't change under this.
I think it'll be more.
Yeah, it won't change under this.
I think 3 years down the road, you'll see the top 10% pay even a greater portion of the taxes. Because this primarily went to large corporations, publicly traded corporations, and middle class. There's the child tax credit was expanded. So it pays to have kids now.
You can even use it up to $200,000 a year in income.
And to get a tax credit.
Yeah. Crazy.
I know there's some parts of this bill that felt like there was
it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like the way it was done.
But. So for the average, listen, the average person listening today, between now and the end of the year, there's not
much,
not much you can do.
Not much.
If
that you
believe,
do.
If you itemize your taxes this year, might make some sense to do. Well, actually, two things. The one is prepay your
property
taxes, not your income tax, but your property tax. Secondly, it's a charitable contribution. And if you're thinking about putting some in, giving some next year, you might want to consider putting into a donor advised fund this year, taking the tax deduction this year.
Yes. And actually taking some highly appreciated assets like a stock or a mutual fund and put it in a donor advised fund. You don't have to give it to the charity right away. You've heard us talk about donor advised funds many, many times on this show. A donor advised fund, you get the deduction in the year you put the money in the donor advised fund, but you don't have to direct it to the charity in that year or make what they call a grant recommendation.
Yeah, so let's say you give $3,000 a year to your church.
You might want to give $10,000 this time or $15,000.
A donor advised fund.
And then dole it out over the next 5 years, $3,000 a year. That would be good tax planning.
Yeah, not a lot of time left in the year to do it. Unfortunately, this would have been nicer to know some of these things 2 months ago.
Saw an email this morning that the donor advised funds are buried right now.
The department's there?
Yesterday, yeah. Fidelity has one. Schwab has one. Most big brokerage firms have donor advised buried. Or you might have a local donor advised fund. So regional community foundations is what the name is.
I don't even know if they have, when the deadline is for some of transferring securities to those could be a problem at the last minute. Not so much so for
the big ones, but
the larger ones. So those are some things to think about. Look here at Hanson McLean.
If you sign up to our newsletter, we'll keep you informed of things like this.
Yeah.
You sign up at our newsletter at HansonMcLean.com.
And my guess is there'll be some tweaks as time goes on to this. Where it's still very confusing is for the small business, the pass-through entities, where they get some deduction, but then it starts phasing back out. But then, wait a minute, if you're in a professional services, such as an accountant's, attorneys, or
investment advisors,
like less investment advisors, that gets phased back out even quicker. I have a colleague of mine that he was ran through the numbers. He said I would be better off retiring. He said I'd be better off not working because of the way he's penalized
on his income.
Because the way it's phased back in.
He didn't work and he was just an owner and he took the dividend.
If he was just an owner, a non-working owner.
And took dividends.
He would be better off. Higher net income than actually showing up to work every day.
Yeah.
It's unintended consequences like this that always happens. And we'll see them in the future. And if we go back to the 1980, last major tax reform act, which I don't really call this a major tax reform act. It wasn't major. Some major, back to 1986. 1981, actually, before that, there were some major changes. And if those you remember that had the limited partnerships that crept up during the 80s, it was all created based on.
Was it TEFRA and DEFRA?
It was all, some of that, it was 88. But what it did, it created all this whole new industry of limited partnerships because people were accelerating deductions. The Tax Reform Act said, oops, we screwed up there, repealed it all, and cost investors lots of money.
Yeah,
that
blew
up. That was a bad deal. So anyway, we are going to go ahead and start taking some calls. So if you would like to be part of the program, I'd love to take your call. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to join us. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. Let's talk to Mark in Iowa. Mark, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
I got a couple questions. One is on a pension payout and the benefits of lump sum versus a structured payout. And then I also have access to a deferred comp plan. So I kind of wanted to hear your perspective on deferred comp. And then I've got an HSA I'm considering maxing my contribution to in hopes of saving for some medical expenses when I retire.
What do you do for a living, Mark?
I'm in corporate America.
Okay.
The last one, I'll start with that. The health savings account, here's our thought on it. If you've got the cash flow to do so, and it's assuming you have a high deductible plan through your employer, maximize that health savings account and don't take any money out until you absolutely need to.
And you can actually invest it in equities, mutual funds if you want. There's a couple companies out there that will.
Like for me, mine gets deducted through work. It goes to a local credit union. When it builds up, I transfer it into an equity account.
All right, good. So you pay out of pocket,
correct?
Never reach your deductible anyway, and just use it as tax deferred savings.
Yep. It's like putting money in a Roth.
I figure there's going to come a day in my life when I'm old and going to need it.
Now, that's Scott. I, on the other hand, have had this conversation with my wife about doing this, and she says, "I don't want to do it like that. I just want to use that money to pay for the expenses that we go on."
Okay.
And I didn't argue it. I
that's hilarious.
What? That's not what I'm landing on.
Oh, I get it.
33 years.
No, I get it.
33 years.
Choose your battles.
Happily married.
All right. Let's
talk of the defined benefit pension plan. So give us the skinny on the defined benefit pension plan and the pension versus the lump sum. When do you need to make the decision?
I'm 51. So I'm best case scenario, probably 8 to 10 years out. So I've got a while before I need to make the call.
All right. Let me give you kind of a rundown on that. What drives?
So they're not giving you an offer today to take a lump sum today. Is that correct?
No, that's correct.
Okay. Yeah.
So what drives that is the interest rate at the time that you're making the decision determines the size of the lump sum. The lower the interest rate at the time, then the bigger the lump sum. The higher the interest rate, the smaller the lump sum. Under the current laws. So that's one thing that will drive the decision.
Under current laws.
Under current laws.
Those have changed about a decade ago, the way the companies calculated the interest rates. The government mandates this because it's insured through the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. So
under current law, that's the way it works. I have no idea what it's going to look like 8 or 10 years from now. The other thing that will drive it is your health and your spouse's health at that point in time and your overall financial situation. So there's no hard and fast rule about whether you take a pension or a lump sum. If the lump sum or the pension makes up a small percentage of your income, you may want to go ahead and take the lump sum. But if you are in great health and you think you're going to live to be 120, then you may want to go ahead and take the pension. If the interest rates at the going time, if the 10-year treasury is at 8%, you probably want to take the pension. If the 10-year treasury is at 1%, you'll probably want to take the lump sum. So the answer there, Mark, is we have absolutely no idea what you should do in 8 to 10 years from now. You call back then, we'll give you an answer.
All right, good. Yeah, I've got and will have, a good amount of other qualified funds saved up at the time through 401ks and a couple of different rollovers. So,
and
I like the idea of having some, guaranteed income. I have seen some folks that took all their pension as a lump sum and then they spend all their time worrying that they're going to run out of money. So, I kind of like the idea of a
we've seen people have taken a lump sum, did tremendously great jobs with it. I have a lot more than they started with, taking out more income than their pension was ever going to be. And then we've seen people literally spend through their assets within a couple of years.
Yeah. So it's
all over the board.
All right. So then your last question was on deferred compensation. Is this a non-qualified deferred compensation or a qualified deferred compensation plan?
It is a non-qualified deferred compensation.
So it's being offered through your employer. And what is your question about this?
Well, as I understand it, and it's I kind of look at it as another tax deferred way of saving outside of my 401k. And the reason I'm considering it is I am eligible for a long term annual bonus now that I wasn't eligible for before. So I'm not. I don't necessarily have an immediate need for the money. I do like the idea of some additional tax deferral and not having it get into my hands and getting spent on other things. So I'm just wondering. Yeah.
It makes sense. Just remember that this is an asset of the corporation that is deferring that income, which means you have signed an agreement with them that says you're going to pay me at some point in time. It is carried on their books as both a liability and an asset. So if the corporation itself runs into financial difficulty, read bankruptcy, then those dollars technically could be at risk.
And if you worked for Lehman or one of those back
it was
today,
gone.
Yeah. Enron.
Yeah. It was gone.
Furthermore, the challenge is you need to elect what your payout's going to be when you enroll in these. So
that's correct.
Yes. And we've seen people that they leave their employer for whatever reason, they get this deferred comp payout coming to them on top of some other income, and the timing of it is just is horrible.
How much money are we talking about putting
in? The annual amount that gets deferred is probably somewhere in the $35,000 to $40,000 range.
And what percentage of their of your wage is that? Your salary is $35,000.
Well, I've got a base of around 200, and then I've got a short-term opportunity that's probably anywhere from 50 to 75 on an annual basis.
Yeah, I don't think you would hurt yourself by putting in 15,000, 20,000. Wouldn't go hog wild on it, but yeah, I don't think you're.
You know, it all depends on the company. I'm just thinking of my own situation.
Yeah. Oh, listen, I have been at companies where I was offered that before, and I waived it. I said no.
Okay.
Only because I didn't want my assets and my job to be tied up in the same.
Yeah, all tied together.
Same thing.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be the first place I'd go in terms of tax deferral.
Very good.
All righty.
Hey, Mark. Appreciate the call. Have a great,
Have
a great, great Christmas. Yeah. Appreciate the call. Stick around for more. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
All right, welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
And here we are, almost Christmas time. You finished all your Christmas shopping?
I did.
One would hope.
I did. My beautiful 21-year-old daughter has helped me do the Christmas shopping, so I had to give her some cash, and we're all good to go.
Oh, that's kind of nice.
Yes, she's very pleasant about it. She actually offers every year, would you like me to get some gifts for mom? And I'm like, yes,
I would. My 21-year-old daughter, she actually should be 22 tomorrow, sent me a long Christmas wish list about a month ago.
Oh, did you?
I'm totally unsolicited.
Did you get
it? And I said to her, no, like some of it, but I said, at what age, I was questioning, at what age do you expect your parents to, like, fill out your Christmas list? And fill, I mean, I said, you don't see me getting a bunch of stuff from my parents.
And what, did she answer the question?
Well, Dad. Oh. Something along those lines.
My daughter reminded me the other night that I told her, I can't say that on the radio, that the truth about Santa on Christmas Eve when she was 9.
Is that right?
Yeah. She said I ruined it. She was up half the night crying.
Why did you tell her at 9 years old?
I don't know.
That is kind of cruel.
Well, because I think the whole thing is a farce. I think that I believe that the truth about the Easter Bunny and Santa should probably...
I mean, for those holidays, they've clearly changed the meaning of the original intention.
And
of
the idea that we make this up for so long that some guy with a big nose and in a red suit is breaking into your house and leaving stuff behind, that's really not going to happen. And that we should quit living this lie.
Okay. Grinch. We'll call Pat the Grinch.
All righty.
Anyway, to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON. Is the number to be part of the program. We'd love a question on anything that's going on in your mind. And I know it's about Christmas time, so you might be out shopping or something.
Yeah. But you might have questions about money.
1-888-242-6766 is the number to reach us numerically. And let's go to Northern California, talk with Adam. Adam, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. How are you guys doing?
Good. How you doing, Adam?
I'm doing good. I'm at about 1,000 feet over Southern California right now, flying along in an airplane. So
look at you.
So you're flying in an airplane.
Flying in an airplane right now.
Are you flying? Are you piloting this plane?
Yeah, I'm an aerial patrol pilot for a California-based oil and natural gas patrol company.
Oh, good for you.
Oh, really?
Oh, what's your question for us?
So I got to tell you, 22 years of doing this program, this is a first.
Yeah. Sounds like you're on a motorcycle, though.
A motorcycle.
Well, Well, believe it or not, I'm in a Fitabria airplane, and I'm talking right through my headset, Bluetooth into my phone. So
beautiful.
All
beautiful.
Right.
What can we do for you?
That is distracted flying. Keep both hands on the. What is this? Not the wheel. What do you call it? The controls.
Throttle. Something. What can we do for you, Adam?
All right. Cryptocurrency.
Yep.
And taxes.
Uh-huh.
I'm curious about y'all's input from the research I've done about the tax implications as far as trading cryptocurrency goes. Specifically, I've seen stuff about you don't get hit with taxes if you leave it in your account. It's only once you withdraw from your account where you get hit with capital gains.
Nope.
Stuff like that. So any input you have would supersede mine.
Okay, so here is how. Let's forget the cryptocurrency. It could be any asset. You pay taxes.
Well, the IRS deemed this as property, as real property, not real estate, but as property.
Yeah, you pay taxes on any gain in it, short term or long term gain. Whether you take the money and spend it or take it out of the account is irrelevant.
So if you buy the account, it's still accruing the tax penalties, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, let's say you bought some cryptocurrency. I'm just throwing some number out. Let's say you bought it. It was $1,000. You sold it later for $1,500. You left the money in some brokerage account, some trading account. You later went back in, repurchased it. What every transaction is reportable for tax purposes. No different than if you're trading a stock or a stock option or bonds or whatever you want to trade.
So. There's probably no mechanism for the exchanges to report to the IRS the gain in it.
Right.
So you technically are responsible for reporting your gains in any of these transactions, as you are in all transactions. If I go and mow my neighbor's lawn and they pay me, I am technically responsible for reporting that as income.
I think they have a $600 de minimis limit or something.
I'm mowing it every weekend,
Scott. You buy a collectible car for $25,000. You turn around and sell it for $30,000. That's a taxable gain.
That is a taxable gain. So you might read things.
If they're not sending out tax forms to their holders, so to speak, then, I mean, the impetus is on us as the consumer trading to.
Yes. As a taxpayer.
Yes.
And same thing with a lot of other businesses in this country. Yes.
Yes, correct. You are responsible. It is self-reporting. If you do not report it, it's tax evasion. Now, are you going to get caught?
You might. I don't know.
You might. I mean, you've already told us too much about yourself. We know where you live.
Yeah, transponder, such and such.
Right.
Yeah, so interesting thing is, like, I read an article the other day. I forgot who it was by, but it was talking about how the IRS went to Coinbase, who's one of the largest cryptocurrency exchanges right now and have been for a while, and said that they only wanted information on account holders of $20,000 and above.
Yeah.
Same thing, on gambling winnings. If you go to Vegas, I don't know what the limit is. There's some dollar amount that if you hit that dollar amount, If you make more than that, then the casino is going to issue you a tax.
A 1099.
A 1099 at the same time.
Yeah.
Anyone in the booth know what that limit is? How much? Wait,
$1,200.
It's $1,200. And it disturbs me that people in my booth here
know what that is. And our chief of compliance knew exactly what it
was. So, for example, let's say you take your plane, you fly over to Vegas, and you make $500, not $1,200. They're not going to issue a 1099, but technically, you're supposed to report any net gambling earnings you have. Now, most people gamble enough. You lose more than you make, so there's nothing to
and
report.
And on Bitcoin, so technically, you pay taxes on it. Whether you do or not, or whether most people do or not, I can't speak to that. So, appreciate the call.
And just, Adam, keep this in mind. Just like the airplane, when you go up, you eventually come back down. You can't continue to go up into the stratosphere. The same is true with these cryptocurrencies.
Oh, yeah, it's always up and down.
Yeah.
No, so far it's been almost straight up. So it will come down at some point. So don't
get too excited.
Yeah, don't get too excited. And sometimes it's okay to take a gain and realize a gain and keep those gains. So appreciate the call, Adam. And it kind of reminds me.
Scott, may I?
Yes.
How do you feel about that little analogy right there? You've been working on that for a little while?
No, that's the first time I've ever talked to someone from an airplane.
I know, but you took him flying in a plane and took the cryptocurrency and turned it into an analogy.
That was pretty.
It was pretty impressive.
But the thing is, it didn't matter that I just said that.
No, not at all. He's going to do whatever he wants.
Correct. It reminds me, Pat, back in if you think of back in the early 2000s when real estate prices were going higher and higher, 2005, 2006, 2007, and I remember we'd have calls on this program because there was people that wanted some clarification on some tax rules, and they say now they call. So I need to own the home for 2 years before I can take the $500,000 exemption. So my plan is such and such. Such. We'd always be like, "What makes you think you're going to have the gain in 2 years on owning this home?" And it's like, "Well, of course not. Real estate always goes up. It's just going up. It's going to keep going up, and all these reasons why it was going to keep going up, and then until it doesn't keep going up."
Very similar to the Iraqi dinar that was the craze just a year ago.
That wasn't a huge craze. The crypto, we just did a show
on cryptos,
on cryptocurrency last week.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's on our website.
Last week's program.
If you want to hear it.
What was the date of that, Jasmine? We did the show? The 16th, yeah. That was...
So, it's, you know, tomorrow's Christmas Eve, isn't it? So if you're feeling, you know, you need to kind of calm
down. Fill the stockings with cryptocurrency.
Right there.
Have you read some of these articles about people who've lost? By the way, this is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Have you lost the passwords?
So...
Because they have these very complex passwords.
And they lose them. They say that approximately, they think 20% of the value in cryptocurrencies are in accounts where people have lost the password. So.
There was one guy who's like $10 million. He figures his cryptocurrency is worth $10 million. Someone, he took an old hard drive. It somehow got thrown in the trash, put into a, whatever, where the trash goes, the dump. The
recycler or whatever.
Whatever they call
it. So we had one.
He's going to pay to have it excavated to find his hard drive.
My son, I'm having a conversation with my oldest last night about this Bitcoin. And he says to me, he says, "Dad, you know, I actually bought a bunch of Bitcoin. I bought some Bitcoin a long time ago and I forgot my password."
No way.
So I said, "Why did you buy some Bitcoin?" He said, "You know, when I went off to college, I wanted a fake ID. And so they would only take Bitcoin. So I found an ATM that would actually convert cash to Bitcoin. I got this Bitcoin.
No way.
I used the Bitcoin to actually buy the fake IDs, which, by the way, he said they never shipped them." Now he's telling me this. Of course, he's 22 now. He said, "So I never got my fake ID, but they stole my Bitcoin when I shipped it overseas," whatever. He said, "But I didn't spend all the Bitcoin. I think I have about $500 worth of Bitcoin in an account, but I can't remember my password."
He thinks it's worth $500 now?
Yeah, but he can't remember his password. He says, "I have no idea what the password was." He said, "When I left it there, it was like $20 or whatever." But so even in my own household.
Well, some of these stories I've read, it's kind of amazing because there's big dollars.
Yeah. Millions and millions and millions and millions.
At least today. And if you're sitting there thinking, "I've got $10 million, if I can only find this hard drive," thinking, "I don't know what that $10 million is going to be worth in the future." Anyway, 1-888-2-HANSON. To join the program. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Oh, before we go back to the calls, look, one of the tenets of financial planning, of good retirement planning, is diversification. Every financial advisor said that. Obviously, you've heard us say it. You've heard it over before, ad nauseum. And if there's something that should be a great reminder to us all, it's happened
this week
and really the last couple months, here in Northern California, where we're headquartered out of.
And you were affected, if you were a shareholder in some of these electric utility companies, you were affected by the fires, whether you live close or not.
PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, the first fires that started in Northern California a couple months ago, they think that some of these were started from faulty wiring or trees too close to lines.
But something blew in that,
that maybe PG&E wasn't taking care of. So PG&E stock, which was around $71 a share earlier, took a big hit. It dropped down to 50-some-odd bucks a share as a result of that. Huge decline. Then this last week, out of the blue, PG&E says, "This is a utility."
Yep. It used to be considered a widows and orphans stock.
They said, "We are discontinuing our dividend.
We're not going to pay out our dividend for the foreseeable future, until we can get our handle around what our claims will be for these wildfires.
The stock got hammered as a result of that. And down about 14% in the middle of the day. So the stock went from roughly $71 a share to $44 a share.
In a relatively buoyant market.
Relatively? Are you kidding me? It's a super buoyant market.
It is.
At a time when everything else is going great.
Yeah. So.
And who has a high percentage of PG&E stock?
Widows and orphans.
And who else? Employees of PG&E, as every company.
Yes.
I can't tell you how often we as financial advisors meet with somebody who works for a company nearing retirement. We say, look, you need to diversify out of this. And they say, yeah, but my company's different. And here's why. That gives them the reason different. And I don't care how many different examples we provide of great companies.
There are always things that lurk out there that are unforeseeable.
Who would have thought?
Dividend. PG&E would suspend a dividend. And by the way, when we say widows and orphans, that's just a saying. I don't know how many orphans have a stock portfolio.
Okay, fair enough. It's true. That's a good point. Wealthy widows. Let's call it for what it is.
Yeah.
But the market value decline has been about $15 billion. So the market has essentially said,
we don't think this, and it's affected other utility companies. Not just Pacific Gas and Electric.
Who would have thought you had a risk of someone's homes?
At PG&E.
Attorneys are already lined up. If you drive down San Francisco, you see them all lined up.
They're lined up.
They're all lined up trying to get into the PG&E building.
Yeah, they got those business cards.
Around the corner, circling Union Square right now. All those attorneys.
Lined up.
Anyway,
sandwich boards on.
I got to tell you, you're nearing retirement, particularly if you're nearing retirement.
They have the sandwich boards that say, don't hesitate, litigate. So, yeah.
They're chanting.
I have sayings for.
All right. So, look, seriously, if you've got more than 10% of your 401k in your employer's stock, it's probably too much. And if you're comfortable with it, just realize, just think about what would happen if that fell in half that value. How would that impact you? Because that's real. That's just what happened to PG&E employees. Not quite half, but almost.
Yeah.
So, all right. 1-888-2-HANSON to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. And let's go to Georgia and talk to Tawana. Tawana, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
So I'm a 46-year young federal employee. I make approximately $135,000 a year. I'm fully eligible to retire at the age of 60, which will be in September of 2031. In 2016, I downsized and purchased a home. I'm currently paying an additional $200 to $300 a month toward the principal payments because it was my goal to make sure that the home is paid off by the time I retire.
What's the value of the home, Tawana?
That part I don't know. I actually paid $225 and I owe $216 on it now.
Got it. And what are your payments a month? What are you paying on it?
Everything, including the taxes, insurance, and the PMI, is $1,500 a month.
Okay.
So my significant other, he lives in Massachusetts. He has a two-family up there, and he said we should set a goal to try to have our homes paid off by the time we're 55, which that would be 9 years for me, 8 years for him. His two-family, to me, pays for itself and then some, so I'm not concerned about that one. But my concern is the fact that I do have the primary residence. I also have another rental property here in Atlanta that I own free and clear, and those assist me with reducing my taxable income on my taxes. So I have a huge concern as far as paying off this home so much further, I guess so many years in advance prior to me retiring, because my income will continue. If I pay off the home by the time I'm 55, I still have at least another 5 years before I actually plan to retire.
This tax code, mm-hmm. that just passed may not help you much now or the next couple of years, but it will in the future.
Well, you've got so you've got right now your standard deduction next year is going up to $12,000.
But she's
correct,
married.
And I write off a lot.
Are
more
you married? No, she's significant other lives in Massachusetts.
No.
Okay. So, and what do you know? What your itemized deductions are today?
between, well, I write off at least like maybe 30 grand a year between my house and the rental property.
Yeah, but the rental is different because the rental goes against rental income.
Yeah.
So what? There's a chance here. Mm-hmm. There's a chance that under this new tax bill, that you're not going to be deducting the interest on your primary residence. If that's the case, what could make sense is to take a loan out against your rental and use the proceeds to pay off your primary, pay down your primary residence.
That may make sense.
Even if it's a higher interest rate on the rental property.
That may make sense. What is the interest rate on your property, the loan?
3.75. 3.75.
And what's the value of the rental property?
It's probably only worth maybe $100. I paid $35 in cash for it, so it's probably worth.
So here's what I want you to do. If you make payments of 50, don't.
But she's concerned about paying it off too early.
In 55, but I wouldn't worry about that. Your goal is age 60. That's the goal.
Yes.
55 is an arbitrary number. 60, although arbitrary, is actually goal based. You want that mortgage.
It's based upon when you're fully pension eligible with no age discounts, right?
Right?
Yeah.
So you want that mortgage to be paid off the day you retire. If you make principal and interest payments on that mortgage, you said it's 3.75%? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
If you make interest payments on or payments on that house of approximately $1,480 a month.
Not counting taxes.
Not counting taxes and insurance. It will be paid off by the time you are 60.
Okay.
Hold one second. I gotta do.
I'm 46.
You're 46.
Why do you want to pay it off by 55?
Just so I can be free. I mean, it just seems like, and I've read.
Well, then the sooner you pay it off, the sooner. I mean, so what is your question to us?
No,
I'm confused.
But
now.
No, that you shouldn't.
The question was.
You don't need to get it paid off by the time you're 55. Don't worry about that.
Okay.
Don't worry about that.
I guess the question was as far as the tax implications, because again, I do write off the interest, which I guess because the tax code may or may not, I don't know what it's.
No, it's changed.
I do write.
You might not write off the interest anymore, or you'll be pretty close to it.
Or it wouldn't even make a difference.
Yeah. Okay. So what you want to do is make payments of this of approximately $1,650 a month plus taxes and insurance. So overall, it's going to be about $2,000 a month. If you do that, the home will be paid off by the time you're 60.
Yes. Okay. So
all right.
I will stick to that goal then. Okay.
Yeah. And you don't need to do anything else. I assume you're putting money into the thrift savings plan.
Yes. I'm maxed out. So I can't do the percentage. I can do the, I take the annual amount, which is now up to $18,500, and divide that by the 27 pay periods we'll have in 2017. But I max out the 401k.
You're doing great. Do you know that?
Thank you.
You really are.
Thank you. I just want to make sure.
And Lee, so here's how you think about the taxes. So next year you're going to be in a 22%. Your effective tax rate. Your marginal tax rate. Your next dollars is taxed at 22%. So if you paid $10,000, how much your interest charge? Your loan balance is a couple hundred thousand. So let's say your interest charges are about $8,000 a year, roughly. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're going to end up saving in taxes a couple thousand as a result. Not even that. 22% of about $1,700 you'll have in tax savings.
Okay.
But you're still out $6,300 for interest charges. So you pay $8,000. You get to save $1,700 in taxes. So you're still out of pocket $6,300 that you just went to the bank for the privilege of having a loan.
Yeah.
Right, so you're still out of pocket. It's not like
how much money do you have in the bank?
In my personal savings, I probably only have 25, and I have about 200 in the 401k.
Okay, you're doing great. Just make payments of approximately $2,100 a month. That includes taxes and insurance on the house. It'll be paid off at 60. You continue that allocation to your 401k. You get the federal employee pension. Your lifestyle, your standard of living will actually go up in retirement versus what you're living like today, because you'll have your 401k paying, your pension paying, and your home will be paid off. And then your significant other sounds like they're doing okay, right?
Yes, he is. Yes.
Yeah.
Those,
All right.
Appreciate the
Thank
call.
Thank you very much.
Don't worry about things. Have a good Christmas. This tax bill, chatted about some of the, many of the provisions earlier. Most of the stuff is set to expire in 2025, 2026, which is a long way from now, obviously. But as time goes on, here's this last call. Here's where it's an opportunity where you're going to see some gamesmanship. So let's say you're in a situation where you can no longer itemize your deductions, but you have a mortgage on your home.
Yep.
And you have a rental or rental properties that are paid off.
Maybe you take the interest. Maybe you take it out of there.
Refinance one of those rentals.
Make it an expense.
Even at a higher interest rate. Pay off your primary residence. Now you can deduct your interest on the rental against the rental income.
You'll see lots of code being written around this.
So here's that's an example. You may or may not see those. But what's going to happen? Let the games begin, right? And look, this is also, frankly, the American way is what's the tax law? Then how do I, being in full compliance with the law, the letter of the law, pay as little tax as possible? Isn't that what we all do?
How do I do it?
We all do that. We all want to pay as little tax as possible. So whether you have a small income and a simple tax return or a large income and a complicated one, most people have the same objective. What we're going to see as the year goes on in 2018, all these little quirks here and there, and we'll be talking about it here at Hanson McLean as we get deeper into this and find little ways to kind of not really game the system, but no different than if you can't contribute to a Roth IRA because your income's too high, here's a way you can actually do it around the back door of Roth IRA. We've talked about that. We've written about that. And we'll see some things here as well with this tax bill. So if you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, now's a good time. HansonMcLean.com is our website. You can go on and subscribe to that newsletter because we will continue to have information on this. And, of course, if you are a Hanson McLean client, as the year goes on, you can have conversations with your advisor. And if you're yet to become a Hanson McLean client, we highly encourage you to take the opportunity to meet with one, particularly with some of these tax changes. Are there some things to be doing to kind of fine-tune your situation? And for some, Pat, for some, this is a great opportunity. Take those tax savings, if you're still working, and put that tax savings in your 401k if you're not maxed out.
Or RIA. Or Roth IRA. But meet with an advisor at Hanson McLean, and they'll walk you through the process, the 7 personal decision points.
Yeah.
And we'll help you prepare for a great retirement.
Get you worth it. Anyway, we are out of time, unfortunately. Or maybe fortunately, because it's right about Christmas time, and most people are starting to think about Christmas. So we certainly hope everyone has a wonderful holiday with family and a great Christmas time. And we'll see you next weekend. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.